I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. That's right. It's Monday night here, and that means Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling are in studio to talk about the news that always seems to hit over the weekend, especially out of the White House. Lots to talk about tonight. We'll talk about what happened with the president's words behind closed doors. We'll talk about DACA. We'll talk about spending. And we'll get in a little Hawaii, too. DACA. How about that? That sound like a good January segment for us here?
You know, happy Martin Luther King Day. I can't think of a more appropriate Martin Luther King Day than one where the president is quoted saying, "I'm not a racist. I'm the least racist guy you'll ever interview."
There you go.
There you go.
That may have been Reverend Dr. King's vision.
Right.
To get less racism in the presidency,
I guess so.
Over time.
I mean, this is not going the way that the president wanted it to, or maybe not. I'm always confused about what he actually wants and what he's doing by having these things come out. But first, let's talk about yesterday, Face the Nation, other places. You saw Republican senators and others kind of coming out and denying that any of the stuff that Senator Durbin talked about, the S word and the hole, and then the White House said it. Oh, it was House. I mean, there's a lot going on here. But the first part is that this has become the argument, and immigration is secondary.
Well, to me, the significance here is this thing happened on Thursday. Story broke Thursday late afternoon. There was no denial from the White House. There was no denial from the White House first thing in the morning. The only thing the president said was kind of a non-denial denial. There were no denials from the other people in the room. It took them, 3 days in order to come out with a denial? And even when they did, it was kind of a weak denial. I mean, come on. I see my friends in the right trying to justify this, trying to defend, trying to do whataboutism.
Who? Which friend of yours?
Not
on
you.
The right?
And actually,
which
I would like
of
to
yours on the right.
I would like to give Chris Roebling
this.
Credit for
Thank
something.
You. Thank you.
This may be a first in the history
no,
of Touche.
It's not.
But
done this before.
I would like to give Chris Roebling credit, because unlike some of his fellow travelers on the Trumpkin right, Chris actually came out foursquare, condemned this.
Well, because he's the head of state. You know, our president is both chief, you know, head of government and head of state. And I don't think any head of state should be caught speaking this way. All heads of state have spoken this way, but they haven't been caught. And when you're in a room with Dick Durbin, you know that he does not wish you well. And he's going to say whatever he's going to say. I agree with David. There was no conclusive and, you know, declarative denial on Thursday night or on Friday morning. What you did have, I think that Senator Perdue actually spoke on Friday morning and was not covered, but that's a minor point. My point is he was caught saying things that folks in his position should not be caught saying. But to your original question, Justin, we don't need this conversation right now. We need DACA to be resolved. We need the government to be funded. We need chain migration to be ended. We need the absolutely mindless lottery system to be tossed out the window. And we need funding for border security. So the basic four elements of the deal remain. And Democrats can have all the field day they want about how bad Trump is. Hallelujah. Go ahead. Do it all you want. But we still, the business of the country moves forward.
But it also, I mean, doesn't it put a lot more pressure on the position that the president takes, especially when it comes to immigration, where he says, I want immigration from countries that can help our economy. I want people who come in who are going to stimulate we're not taking in other countries' bad hombres, if you will. But I mean, there's something. Does it hurt his position that he's on the record or not on the record, but now there's all this behind closed doors of what he said? Does it hurt his position and hurt him that this has become the story?
Trump is a master of self-destruction. every time he gets just a little momentum, he does something like this. So he actually had a little momentum coming off the tax deal. He had that little show where, you know, he he tried to pretend he was in charge, only to be held back by Kevin, it's not Kevin Brady, it's the other Kevin in your party. McCarthy, yes. Who said, no, you don't want a clean DACA bill, because he didn't understand what a clean DACA bill was. I mean, this is hurts him, and it hurts the ability of the country to move forward. Look, Democrats want a deal. There are many Republicans who want a deal. But when the guy at the top does things like saying, you know, why do we have to have more Haitians? Why do we have to have people coming from those poopgate countries? You know, why can't we have more people from Norway? And you're like, dude, could you be a bigger poster child for a racism?
I don't think that the statements are necessarily racist, and I think that that is an unfair characterization. My concern is United States leadership and the fact that these countries have been called out. But to get to the policy requirement, Democrats have for years said it's a broken system. Republicans for years have said it's a broken system. Folks tried under G.W. Bush to get it changed. That got swamped. Folks tried under Obama. That got swamped. Here you've got, regardless of what he said or didn't say on Thursday afternoon, Trump did lead that meeting, notwithstanding David's jaundiced view of the meeting. He did lead that meeting, and he showed all America that the news cycle from the prior 72 hours that he's, you know, incompetent and insane and, you know, bouncing off the walls, it was all hooey, Democrat, yeah, leftist, right, hooey. So he comes in, he does a great job at that thing. And yes, he's got some momentum and things get diverted, right? And I'm trying to make the point that the only thing slowing down a deal at this point is Democrat intransigence.
What's the deal? What would be a good deal for both? Let's role play. The Democrat senator and the Republican senator in the room, what's a good deal on immigration and DACA?
Well, a good deal, what I think is going to be the middle of the outcome is do DACA, do the full DACA deal, provide some money for border security. Democrats aren't going to want to call it a wall. Republicans are going to want to say it's a wall. Be nonspecific about that border security. Do things that are going to strengthen the borders. That's the deal. It's there for the taking. I totally disagree with Chris. It is not Democratic intransigence that is preventing a deal. It is the Republicans incompetent. And to your point, Chris, I don't agree with you about the characterization of the meeting where the president clearly didn't know what he was talking about. But even if you...
It was a 55-minute meeting, and you're referring to a 32-second bit of a 55-minute meeting,
David. No, it wasn't,
David,
just the 32-second
bit. It's absurd what you're saying,
even
as usual.
Even if I grant you what you're saying, if he wanted to show that he wasn't some crazy, loony, right-wing guy, racist guy, yet kind of undid that 24 hours later.
Well... The deal, I think, is pretty much what was discussed in that meeting in the cabinet room. And so what you're talking about is a transformation, a DACA transformation. Absolutely. What you do with the Democrats is get back to the bill that they all supported under Obama, which had full funding for 750 miles of wall. David says you put some amount of money into this thing. And, you know, I don't know if it's $18 billion or $23 billion. And there are folks in D.C. who will say, oh, my God, if you do 18, you're not doing this. Or if you do 23, you're doing, yeah, but whatever the number is. But you because all of the Democrat leadership voted for that brand new wall for 750 miles. Start with that. Get that going. And then... chain migration no longer has a constituency.
You've got to stop saying chain migration.
And you get rid of the lottery, and now you're in business.
This is a point that Dick Durbin made to Donald Trump personally, sitting with him in that very same meeting. He said, Mr. President, please stop using the phrase chain migration, because to a large segment of America, the African Americans, their ancestors came over in chains. It is offensive and demeaning to them. And yet when you use that phrase, you really hurt your case. And Trump's response was, well, that's a good line, Dick.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not a good line.
Yeah, it's a good line.
It's offensive.
There are about 150 press releases from Democrats in Congress talking about chain migration and how important it is. So this is all selective outrage, which is exactly what Durbin...
Can we all as a society recognize that what we've done or said 5, 10, 15 years ago, press releases, whatever, we can make a transition, no, say that's insensitive? I mean, I don't understand why we can't all say,
yes,
stop using that word.
No, we don't say them anymore. Because you're talking about chain migration from Democrat press releases 3 weeks ago. So Dick Durbin is not there to get a deal. Dick Durbin is there to energize the base for November. Dick Durbin is not there to promote the interests of America. Dick Durbin is there to try and get a Democratic majority in the House and possibly even in the Senate.
Actually, the president's taking care of that for us, but thanks very much.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling in studio tonight. We're Touche, our regular segment we do Monday nights here. We come back, let's talk about spending, and let's talk about what happened in Hawaii this week and how that has political connotations as well. Dave, Chris, stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Touche. Right. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio tonight. Obviously, spending is an issue. I mean, we're seeing with the... Let's talk about that, because obviously if there's no immigration deal, there really isn't a spending bill, right? I mean, or a plan. We're going to have government shutdown on the list as another thing we got to deal with coming up here.
You know,
Democrats might shut down the government.
Democrats have been being really good citizens by agreeing to all these continuing resolutions when, in fact, all they had to do is say no. So they've done that pretty consistently. Democrats don't like to shut down the government because they actually believe in the government, whereas Republicans love to do it.
No one does.
So the question is, will it shut down? You know, the expectation is there will be another continuing resolution and it's another false alarm, kind of like Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii.
269 said it's difficult to imagine the fear in Hawaii, the people in Hawaii experienced. Thankfully, Trump quickly assured everyone it was a false alarm, except he didn't. I have a question about politicizing it.
I mean, this points out the fact that Hawaii has no radar. They've got no satellite system. They don't know what's going on. And yet they have this mechanism, which is an emergency. And all states have emergency management, you know, for
Tuesday
floods
tests,
or
yeah.
hurricanes, whatever, tornadoes. But these guys, I mean, this is so sad for the folks who were affected. And it reveals this disconnection because the Defense Department knows what the heck is going on. And I watched that whole press conference with the four or five guys who came up and talked about it. And then I watched the Hawaii Congress lady. I haven't heard anybody say, oh, and that's when Elmo picked up the phone and called the Pentagon to say, are we under attack? Who is minding this story?
What's the political angle here? Because the congresswoman from Hawaii kind of...
Tulsi Gabbard.
She kind of called out that this is asking Trump to to get back to negotiations with Kim Jong-un. Made it political in a way that I'm not sure he necessarily had anything to do with.
Yeah, no, I don't really think it has anything to do with that. I mean, it was a sneak preview of an eventuality that is unimaginable. And so I think that... It kind of freaked everybody out that this happened, but it also reminded people that we really have very limited defenses, and this is a possibility. Fortunately, I still haven't heard the president say anything about this. I haven't heard him say anything. I haven't heard him tweet anything. So I have no idea what the White House's position on this is, but it seems like there's a larger question for states, to Chris's point, of what do they do? How do they do it? How are they supposed to engage? Should it be as simple as a guy, during a shift change, a guy goes to do a test and pulls the wrong, goes one step too far on the drop-down menu, the way we might order a pizza, instead all of a sudden you freak the heck out of millions of people.
It's easy to politicize it, and that's what I think the Congress lady was doing, and I think ill-advisedly, and nobody turns to her for advice on strategic
anything,
policy. So her point was political and irrelevant. The relevant point is that we have had a period of global peace because of concern over the use of nuclear weapons and because of rational actors controlling those weapons and because of mutual assured destruction. So you have three elements there. And what we are all experiencing and what we're concerned about with Kim Jong-un and with the mullahs in Iran is irrational actors getting their hands onto nuclear weapons. And then you have the terrorist dimension. So it is, folks who haven't seen On the Beach, a phenomenal movie from the 1950s about a nuclear holocaust. Or if you haven't seen Failsafe,
I prefer Failsafe.
Yeah. Failsafe will keep you up at night. And of course, the comedy version is Dr. Strangelove. But you know, you got to take a look at some of these things, and you've got to put yourself into the moment when all of the conversation's over. And that's what we've avoided for 50 years. And we've still got to avoid it now. Find a way to do so with North Korea.
Okay, well, let me ask a question about, you know, the congresswoman at her point, politicizing, putting it aside. The point was, let's figure this out. Let's figure this out with North Korea now.
That's not exactly her point.
But she's saying go to the table and let's negotiate something. Where, I mean, is that something that we all should start pushing our administration to say enough of the tweets, enough of the drills, let's get to the table, negotiate, and put us in a situation where we feel safer?
Yeah, I mean, look, Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman who is a veteran, lost me when she started being an apologist for Saddam.
Kim Jong-un.
Hafez al-Assad. Bashar Assad, his son. Shows that we're
in
old
Syria.
People. In Syria.
Oh, yeah.
But the question of whether there should be, quote, negotiations, what does that look like? Because one of the points that I've made repeatedly is that Donald Trump has established a marker. And the marker is that in order for him to win, North Korea must give up their nukes. North Korea is not giving up their nukes. So what does that mean? Where do we go? What is the middle ground? I don't think that there's a middle ground that gives North Korea their nukes quickly.
That was the policy of Barack Obama. It was the policy of George W. Bush. It was the policy of Bill Clinton. And it was the policy of George H.W. Bush.
American policy
Been American policy that we want a denuclearized peninsula and that North Korea has to cease its nuclear program. That is not new.
Yes,
What is new is, I think we can all agree that we have seen North Korea as a major focal point for Trump from his first dinner with the Chinese president. He has probably spent more time on this than any other
diplomatic initiative. True, yeah.
And he's got a lot of results to show for it. The ratcheting up of UN sanctions, the frequent meetings of the Security Council, the multilateral approach. And what we see at this moment from North Korea is what we have seen before. And that is, well, don't worry about any of that. We want to talk to our friends in South Korea about coming to the Olympics. And this is a sort of a diversion of attention and a stall tactic. North Korea is a very serious problem. It takes a heck of a lot of attention.
Yeah, I have a little different perspective, because what happened is that Trump challenged Kim as to whose button is bigger and more effective.
That's where we lose.
And no, because what Kim did
you
under Donald Trump
is
larger and larger bombs, including, we believe, a hydrogen bomb, and larger missiles that now have the range to attack the entire United States.
We got revved
developed
up right
under
at the
Barack
end.
Obama, because he never did anything about
there
North Korea.
Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy will pick it up next week.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jeff.